Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 5 of Season 5's Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1999 Bruce Willis starring action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is Jay Cluett of the Con Air Pod and the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Let's get out of the way. This is a Christmas film. Yes, it is. Friday question.
No, that's not the Friday question anymore. Nice try. But is it? Do you really think this is a Christmas movie? But if you want to get into that debate, this is less of a Christmas movie than the first one.
I think, yeah. I mean, yes. I would agree.
They rely less on Christmas things in this movie than they did in the first one.
It's a busy airport because it's Christmas. But
that's the only thing that they use here. It's a busy airport. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And, you know, that maybe he can't get his car for a few days because of Christmas. I don't know. Or his mother-in-law's car.
Yeah. And it's the reason why it's okay to tear the ticket up at the end, because it's Christmas.
That's right. That's right. But will it be Christmas yet? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and find out. Maybe we'll find some clues along the way that we'll be able to figure that out. So minute 5 begins with the elevator door bell ding and ends with John trying to give an answer. So yesterday we ended things with a group of men that are all similarly dressed in like winter coats, and each one of them is carrying a present. You know, a nicely wrapped present that according to the information that Jay gave us, you know, was they hired someone to wrap all of these presents so that we could get an idea as to, make sure that everything was wrapped properly. And we see all these men walk over towards the elevator. If you count, I was able to count 11.
Okay.
But the assumption is that there are 12. Maybe there's one that's a little out of focus that you can't really tell or whatever it is. And then we see the bell of the elevator dings. There are two elevator doors, and they file in to both of the elevators. And the elevator that we follow into is the one with Stewart. And there are actually, you know, 6 men in there, including Stewart. You know, and I love the way that they do the shot where everyone is walking in, you know, very militaristically, I guess you can say, the way that they're marching in and stuff like that. And you have Stewart standing by the outside of the elevator. And then as soon as they get in, he does a quick turn, gets into the elevator, and then turns around. And the camera, zooms in and focuses more on his face as the elevator doors are about to change. And you can see...
He still looks so serious.
Yes, completely serious. You know, the Joker would say, why so serious, right? And I mean, you can see the different people in the background. You see Vondi Curtis Hall here. I think Don Harvey is also there with him. Some of the others we'll be able to catch later on throughout the movie. Some of them have they all have names. Some of them have recognizable names, and some of them are less recognizable. But we'll get to that over the course of the movie. I mean, have you ever seen Memento?
Yes.
Okay. So the guy who plays the motel clerk. Mark Boone Jr. Do you know that he's one of these 12 guys?
I saw that he's in there somewhere, but I haven't spotted him.
Yeah, I've seen him. I don't like in the shot that we have here. You know, I wasn't able to spot which one is him, but it just amazes me. You know how much he changed in 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know him more as a bigger, hairier guy.
Yes, exactly.
Than any of these people.
Yeah. So you know, through the course of this, I'll try and figure out which one he is. You know, in order to figure out when he actually gets killed, you know, or is he one of the ones that actually makes it out? Because, you know, there are a few that make it to the last scene, more or less,
yeah.
Or make it to the airplane. How's that? And then the shot changes. And once again, we get to see the couple who are talking on the phone. And then the phone next to them, there's a woman on the phone that hangs up the phone. And she sort of like blocks John McClane's, way to get to the phone, and we see John rush before some other guy gets there. You know, it's I guess it's first come first serve. It's not I was standing here first or anything like that.
There's no queue. Yeah, this is it's bedlam.
Yes,
it should be a nice orderly queue. But yeah, the guy who doesn't get the phone, the moustache guy, he's not even trying.
He's
You
like,
can tell
he's not gonna
he's
get to call my
extra.
wife
He's like,
back.
go for the phone, but don't
Yeah.
get the phone. Like, John's gonna get the, yeah. He just looks kind of gormless. Don't look at the camera. Look down.
That's right. I've tried. I've tried.
Don't look at Mr. Willis.
I'm assuming they say that a lot. I'll say this again when I do Die Hard 3, but I actually know somebody who apparently was walking down the street in New York when they were filming, and he saw Bruce Willis, didn't know it was Bruce Willis, and he asked him for the time, and Bruce Willis just laughed at him and then told him the time, not realizing that because the guy didn't realize who it was. So, but it makes sense. Don't look at Mr. Willis. I agree with that. So John gets on the phone. And what is the first thing that we notice here? When you look at the phone, so it says Pacific Bell.
It's a specific color, despite them being in DC or
That is
Denver.
correct. That is very
No
correct.
way
So
that would have Pacific Bell on the phone.
that's right. Now, I remember in the early days of IMDb, I was checking IMDb for as long as I can remember. So in the early 90s, I was always on IMDb checking goofs in movies and things like that. And I recall seeing this even before then. This was something that I noticed, and it was something that was written in newspapers and stuff like that. Like there are a bunch of goofs in this movie that shouldn't have happened. So, this is something you think that somebody should have noticed. I mean, on the commentary, so Rennie Harlan mentions the fact that he didn't notice it and nobody pointed it out to him. But isn't
I mean,
don't they
well,
have people that they
he's
pay
not
them to do
American.
that?
He's yes, I mean, there's a script supervisor all about continuity, I guess. Like, I mean, anyone looking at this should, like, there's so many people would have passed by this, and maybe they noticed it, but it was too late, and it would have added $100,000 to the budget to delay shooting to put some new faceplates on this. I don't know. I think it was just deemed not
Yeah.
worth doing. But yeah, Rennie, he's from Finland, so maybe he didn't know that Pacific
Well,
Bell
that's what
wouldn't
he
be
said.
in
He said he didn't
DC.
know. He was told afterwards, and but he didn't know that there isn't a national carrier. That is something that's broken down.
It's not something I've picked up on before preparing for this podcast. And I've seen this one before. I may have read that Pacific Bell and thought, yeah, fine, whatever. That's the name of the phone company.
Correct. Okay, but again, it goes back to the
So
geographical.
it's not something
It
that
goes back
surprises
to
me.
the aspect that you're not as familiar with the geographical locations of Bell and things like that.
Yeah, or yeah, 'cause I mean, is it the I thought it would be the Pacific that would be the wrong, but I don't. It doesn't really matter, does it? That's what I know about phone companies.
Right. Oh, whatever. We talked about Pacific Bell in the past, so I'm not going to go back into that. But yeah, every area of the U.S. has a different type of bell. I grew up in Michigan; it was Michigan Bell,
I see.
and I guess in the East Coast it was known as Atlantic Bell for a while or whatever. Who knows? Now it's all changed, so I don't think it's the same type of thing. But this was filmed in L.A., so obviously, they no one thought about changing the fact that they're filming in LA, but this is taking place in Washington where they will not have Pacific Bell. So I just find it really interesting that nobody, literally nobody noticed it when they were going through this whole movie, when they were filming it. And then he picks up the phone and starts to dial, and then the shot changes and we're actually on an airplane. So another thing that was pointed out by Rennie Harland in the commentary is that in 1990, one could not call an airphone. That
No.
was not possible. So it's just very funny that that's what he does here. And then we see the shot of,
In this world, they
in this
can.
world they can. That's right. And then we see a shot of a plane, flying. You see the NEA, and it says Northeast on the tail. So it's Northeast Airline. The plane is in flight. We get all the flashing lights. And then we see a smiling Holly on a.
It's like just the beautiful orange
That's right.
glow on this plane and on holiday, it's stunning.
Which again,
It's
if this is in late in the afternoon, theoretically the sun should be behind them if they're flying from the West Coast to the East Coast, not on the side.
Do we know that she's definitely, yeah, she's fine from
She's
LA,
flying
isn't
from
she?
LA, no question about that. So it makes a little sense, but who cares? It's nice the way they do the shot. And then we hear the voiceover of John, as the shot starts panning towards Holly. And we hear, "This is Lieutenant McLean. Somebody there beat me?" And her response is, "I'd like to think I'm somebody." And he goes, "Honey, what are you doing? Where are you? Did you land yet?" So it's just a little...
Fair question. The plane's late.
Yes. Fair. Yeah. But again, in the days before cell phones, isn't he aware of the fact that, you know, he's calling an air phone? Because let's say it has an area code. Okay. The area code is probably not going to be... I mean, again, you can't call a phone. So I don't know what area codes they would use on an air phone.
Yeah. What area code do they have in the sky?
But the point is that it wouldn't be... the area code of Washington, D.C. You know, you'd think that he would be curious who's calling him from what number. You know, again, this was nowadays, you know, you can have a number and, you know, you can live in one place and have a number from a different place. It doesn't make a difference. You know, a lot of people have those cell phones that you can get your cell phone number, whatever number you want, because people aren't paying long distance charges like they were back then. I mean, I remember growing up in Detroit. So I had a good friend who I went to school with that was living in Windsor, which is across the border in Canada. And I would call him and my parents would be furious because they would get these really high phone bills because I was making international calls to a friend from school. You know, and you know, as a 16 or 17 year old, I didn't really think about these things beforehand. Obviously, once they pointed it out, I started talking to my friend more in school than at night. You know, which makes sense. You know, I don't know how it worked in England. You know, at what point, you know, if you were to call between, you know, England and Ireland, is that considered long distance?
I do not know. I never tried to call anybody in a different country ever.
And Scotland? Is never Scotland considered? You've never because you make all your arrangements online.
Yeah,
so you don't have to call them. Okay, that's fair.
Also, I don't have any. I don't know anyone in. I don't know, outside of podcasting. I don't know anybody in other countries.
Know anyone. That's a good point. And most of those people you can speak to on email or Skype or whatever else you use.
Yeah,
that's true. What's really blatant here is why hasn't John, you know, in the airports, they have screens that show every single flight and they tell you what's going on with the flight, where, when it's supposed to land, you know, and things like that. You have like a screen of departures and a screen of arrivals and you go there for the information. And John didn't even think to do that.
He hates flying. He hates technology.
But looking at a screen... But looking at a screen, I don't know.
You saw the
because he's saying
he looked at the beeper with.
That's right. Because that we know. Because then he says, "Did you land yet?" So that's great. Because like he has no clue about what's going on. And then her response is, "It's the 90s, remember? Microchips, microwaves, faxes, airphones." Now, I love the fact that this script was written in the 80s, and they automatically put that in there. It's the 90s.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, the 90s just – actually, it's not the 90s if this takes place in December 1989. That's so true. It's almost the 90s. It's not the 90s yet.
Yeah. That's a good point. Like, that's right. This was released 6 months before Christmas 90. Oh, this film was garbage.
And then his response is, "As far as I'm concerned, progress peaked with the frozen pizza." And then she goes, "Listen, we're going to be about a half hour late landing, okay? I just wanted to let you know." Now, is she asking for his approval to have the plane land late? Yeah.
She says, "I don't know." What are you talking about?
She says, "We're going to be a half hour late, okay? Is that okay with you?"
I guess. That's just the way people talk.
I know. It's just very funny to think about it from that perspective because it sounds as if she's basically asking for permission, which, as you pointed out, obviously she's not. She's just stating a fact.
Okay, do you understand?
Right.
Okay.
Could be. Okay. Basically, you're going to have to sit and wait for me another half hour in the airport, even though, he showed up really early. I mean, I remember back in these days when you had to go to the airport, there was a number you could call to find out about, you know, what whether the plane was supposed to be coming in on time or not. You know, you call a number, and then it would say, put in the flight number, and then you press the buttons for the flight number, and then it would say, okay, flight number, whatever, whatever, is scheduled to land at this hour. Stuff like that. So apparently he just wanted to get out of the in-laws house. You know, he said, okay, the plane's coming in at 5. I'm going to be there at 5. There's no way it's not going to. You know, that type of thing. And then her next question is, are the kids okay? And then he says, they'll lose their minds from all the sugar your parents give them. And then her response is, she ignores that and just says, did mom give you a hard time about borrowing her new car? And he goes, no, not yet. And yeah. I mean, this is a great line because we're privy to something that she's not. I mean, we know that he doesn't have the car anymore. And for him to just say, oh, no, not yet. She's not upset. She was happy at the time. But, you know, and as we're talking, you know, we get a wider shot that shows, you know, the woman sitting next to her. The whole thing is just really strange, like I said, that he didn't look at some sort of screen to find out what's going on with her plane. And that he needs to find out from her that the plane is going to be, you know, going to be delayed. Nowadays, that wouldn't happen because you can't really talk on the plane.
He was thrown by having a phone call from her.
Yeah.
Because in his mind, if you're on a plane, you can't make a phone call. Therefore, she must have landed.
Right.
So he's still kind of reeling from that
revelation.
Wait, you're on the phone and on a plane?
Right. What? I'm trying to figure out, by thinking about this whole movie, what are they trying to say about the fact that he doesn't like technology? Like, it's not something that is used later on that because he doesn't use technology, you know, something happens properly or something, you know, he's not in an advantage because of that. What advantage is he in?
Yeah, because, well, he has to go to Marvin to look at the blueprints. Is it Marvin?
And how would he have done that if he'd been, you know, what, he would take a laptop and start checking the blueprints? I mean, you know, that wouldn't have happened either.
No, that's what I'm trying to think of is things that he has other people do for him. Yeah, you're right. But I mean, he's not in this chapter, but the actor who plays Marvin, Tom Bauer, is in a great film this year. We Have a Ghost.
I really like that.
I was watching the film, like, well, I recognize that guy. It's Marvin.
That's right. I was shocked that he's still alive.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I was like, wait,
because he looks really old in this movie. Like,
I have the exact same thought watching it because, like, he was, because in this film he's like 51, but he appears to be older than,
because he talks about Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And this is 89. Okay, so Iwo Jima happened in 45.
The actor was born in 38, so I don't think he was any.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
He's playing old. He's always played old, it looks like, it seems.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, it's just very, very strange because, again, you would think that there would be some sort of payoff later on about the fact that John doesn't like technology.
Well, it could just be character detail. I mean, like, we're told at the start of Jurassic Park that Alan Grant doesn't like technology, doesn't get on with computers. But that doesn't really pay off later other than to have Lex do the hacking. It's not like Alan Grant's going to do it and he can't because it's computers. She just does it instead.
Right.
So I feel like it's just a way of getting us on side with the character a little bit. Like, oh, they're not some kind of superpowered hero who can do anything. They have their weaknesses. He can't do technology. That's a relatable aspect to a lot of people watching Die Hard 2. Like, yeah, I hate computers too.
Maybe.
It's doing our job.
I mean, again, in 1990, most people did not have computers. Most people did not have cell phones. Most people could not afford to make phone calls on air phones. You know, they were very expensive at the time.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, that, again, we're going to get into that. There's a lot of air phones used in this movie, and there are a lot of mistakes made with air phones regarding their capabilities in our world. Apparently, in the world of John McClane, you know, things make a little more sense with what you're allowed to and what you can't do. You know, the fact that even Renny Harlin states that, you know, he knew at the time that you can't make a phone call to an airphone, but hey, you know, why don't we use it? Why don't we do that anyway?
Yeah, it's
exactly. Hey, it's not only a movie. It's, you know. So, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
I do not. I just want to before I get out of here, I want to take a moment to talk about the great Dennis Franz, also not in this scene, but Dennis Franz is a delight in Die Hard 2. I'm looking forward to hearing more about him. And if any of your listeners haven't seen the music video to the Dixie Chicks' Goodbye Earl, they absolutely should do, because it heavily features Dennis Franz in a role that you would not think Dennis Franz is in. Goodbye Earl. Earl. E-A-R-L.
All right, Earl. I've never heard of that, so I'm gonna check that either. Okay. See, there you go. If you do the Western drawl, it works a little better for you. Yeah. All right, so the script. So as I was reading yesterday, it talks about them walking down the corridor. It says they get into two adjoining elevators, the stark lights above their heads and their unmoving expressions making them look like aliens ready to beam up. As the doors close, you know, it cuts away. And then it says McClane squeezes past an enormous woman exiting a phone booth with a present as big as she is. Catching his breath, he drops his quarters and dials. So, I mean, the woman is a little big in this movie, you know, that they use here. The thing I like here is the fact that, you know, you can correlate it to what we're going to see in the next movie, in Die Hard with a Vengeance, you know, when he needs to get on a phone and there's a woman on the phone and yeah. The woman is also a large woman. I'm actually now very curious if it's the same large woman, you know, who, which would be really funny if they use the same actress in both of those, but I don't know, because I don't know if she's credited here, because she doesn't really have anything to say.
I doubt that she is. I'm trying to find her myself, and I can't see anything.
Yeah, I don't see anything about woman on phone or something like that. I don't think that she is listed here. So we will never be able to know if it's the same person or not. Oh, well. And then it continues by saying, you know, jump to the airliner. Holly McClane is here, airphone on her ear, and a beautiful sunset over the plane's wing, visible through the nearby window. With a compact portable computer, Filofax, and calculator piled on it, Holly's seat-back table looks like a traveling office. And then you have the same conversation between them about, you know, about, I'd like to think I'm somebody, did you land? And then she says, Holly says, John, wake up. It's the 90s. Microchips, microwaves, faxes, and earphones. And then he mentions the line about the frozen pizza again. And then she says that they're going to be late. And then she asks if the kids are okay. And then his response is, just speeding on sugar, thanks to your parents. I really appreciate you coming a day late, honey. Nothing I like better than a weekend with the Munsters. So I'm glad that they cut that out. Doesn't really, doesn't really fit in here. And then she asks about the car. And the answer is, no, not yet. So that's all we have in the script.
So the woman on phone in Die Hard with a Vengeance is Barbara Hipkiss, who was also the casting associate of Die Hard with a Vengeance. That is her only credit. So I'm looking at a picture of her compared to Die Hard 2, and I do not believe it's the same lady.
That's fair. But I like the correlation of the fact that, you know, he's waiting for a phone, and there is a large woman blocking his way, I guess you can say.
She is credited as Phone Woman in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Right. New superhero.
That's true. All right. So every Friday, we have a new segment that I'm doing called Where Are They This Weekend? And I'm sure that Jay, just like everyone else, is curious to know what it is that we're going to be doing here. So this is something I sort of borrowed.
I am indeed.
This is something I sort of borrowed from some other MXMers who've done things. And basically, the idea is to quiz my guest as to how well they know some of their favorite movies.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay. So since Jay has done two, movies by minute movies or movies by scene movies, let's say, let's see if Jay knows where his movies are up to between the 5 and 6 minutes. Okay, so in Deep Blue Sea, what do you think is happening between minutes 5 and 6?
See, we didn't break it into minutes. So this is okay. So scene one.
Would you rather I not do this as a quiz and that I just say
No, this is absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. So Deep Blue Sea. Scene one is the boat being attacked by the shark. I think that was like 3.5 minutes long. So scene two, we had Nick Rehak on for that one, was up in the office where Susan is talking to Sam Jackson and the silent Ronnie Cox. So towards the end of that scene, they get on a plane. So I think Between like minute five of Deep Blue Sea is going to be around about when she's talking about having to tell her dad about her mum died every day. It's one of the saddest moments in Deep Blue Sea. It's like, you ever tried to tell your dad? See that look on his face? So it's going to be like around then, or around when she and Sam Jackson are on the plane flying to her.
Okay, Jay, first of all, great. It's basically the scene where she's trying to convince Russell Franklin to give her another 48 hours in order to to prove that
the Alzheimer's research,
that their research actually works. Exactly. You know, and she does use the argument, you know, about watching someone deteriorate from Alzheimer's. So give me another 48 hours, and that's it. So, yes, very good, Jay. I'm impressed. Now, Connor, what happens between the fifth and sixth minutes? Again, I'm looking at the cusp, you know, between week one and week two.
Okay, so Connor, first scene is him being honorably discharged from the Rangers, coming home to see Trisha Poe. And the second scene is the fight in the rain. So I think it's going to be, and then he has the court case. It's a very quick fight, and then he's into the courtroom. It's Sean Homer gone for that one. So I think that's going to be when he's talking to his lawyer. He's talking to one of the goons from Jurassic Park 3, John something, is my guess for Connor. He's talking to his lawyer,
and
he's in
court. Okay, and once again, you are correct. It's the end of the fight, and it's the beginning of the point where his lawyer tells him you should plead guilty because they'll go easier on you. Very good, great, Jay. That's great. See,
I think this would have been much more difficult to do later minutes in the film because it all would kind of merge together. I just got to work out. Okay, so this is the start. What happens just after the start? That bit. So
that's fair. All right, fine. So, we'll see how all of the rest of the guests fare. You know, even the ones who don't do movies by minute. So I've asked each of them to send me a list of their top five movies, their top five favorite movies.
I'm grateful. Neither of my films have a minute 124, so I'm not gonna have to do that if I come on towards the end of it.
That's right. That's a good point. So I'll find another minute to get you on that one, dude.
And I would have been stuck trying to do Deep Sea 2 and 3. I'm not sure what happens in those minutes for those ones.
Yeah, no, I didn't check those. So, yeah. I have to limit this somewhat. I can't, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if Alex were to return, I wouldn't, you know, try and quiz him on all, 10 seasons that they've done.
Yeah, you just pick one, I guess, or pick a couple.
Oh, well. All right, Jay, do you want to, for one final time, tell people where they can find Jay Clewitt?
Yes, of course. So, as I've mentioned over the course of the week, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, Con Air, the podcast, and The Lambcast, doing Lampity movie trivia, are the three podcasts I host. LifeVsFilm.com is my personal site. You can find me on Twitter at LifeVsFilm, Deep Blue Sea Pod, Con Air Pod, and my personal Instagram is JayCluitt, which is mainly pictures of my dogs.
Okay, great. thank you for that, Jay, and thank you for joining us this week. It's always a pleasure having you on the first week of these shows. I hope you're not getting tired of it, and I hope that you will continue to agree to partake. You know, even though sometimes you're my guinea pig.
I'm happy to be here. Happy to kick off another film. Always happy to do that, Rob.
All right.
Eventually, you'll pick a film I don't want to talk about, which I will still come on and talk about, but then just won't listen.
Well, I haven't reached that point yet, so I'm still doing well.
Not yet.
So there you go. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, everyone, I will be back on Monday with a new guest. This time it's another MXMer, someone who's never been on before. So my show. So we'll hopefully that will fare well. Actually, week three is also another MXMer who's never been on our show. So, you know, we'll have to see how those go. So until Monday, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and